This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Extra Points with knowledgeable analysts and exclusive special guests. It's your look at the world of sports through the eyes of Place to Be Nation. And now, your hosts, Scott Criscolo and Dr. G. George Ribolino.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 8 of your home for all sports, Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I am Scott Criscolo. It is an interesting show tonight, and the reason it's interesting is because I'm going to have to break the fourth wall a little bit. I have to break kayfabe, to use our other wrestling terms. Dr. G, my co-host, my compadre, is having... let's say he's having about as much progress and success with his Skype and his internet tonight as the Spurs did with their air conditioning the other night, which is unsuccessful. So he's going to battle as best he can, but you may not hear the doctor's voice this evening. Having said that, I recorded, we did an interview earlier on with one of our guests, so it may sound a little funky, but the info is just as great, and we'll go over the whole show with you in a moment. I'm going to bring in my special guest host on this segment. He's actually going to be on two segments. He'll be on later on for his normal baseball piece. One of my favorite people, contributor to PlaceToBeNation.com. He is Place to Be Nation's Extra Points baseball analyst, and he'll be on later as well. Mr. Joel Barnhart, I just drafted you like out of nowhere. But you're not drafted to the Astros, though.
Oh, well, thank God.
We're a better team. Yes. He's pinch hitting here in the opening segment. To get through while the doctor is battling his Skype issues. And for those that have been with Place to Be Nation from the beginning, and that includes our Place to Be podcast, as you know, my PIC, Justin Rosero, and I have had our myriad of technical issues. And if you remember, I believe it was the 1996 King of the Ring vault. I had to do – it was the only show in history that I had to do from a landline. That's how bad I had it. So we've had our share of technical issues, and we're having them tonight. So, doctor, if you come on, that is a special treat. But I have a feeling he'd be lost in the information superhighways construction. one lane open right now. But Joel, it is. I appreciate you pinch hitting, and Joel will leave us at the end of this segment. He'll be back for the final segment to talk his normal baseball expertise. Our next segment, I will be joined by Andrew Reich to talk about the NBA Finals, the playoffs in general, the selling of the Clippers, and a little draft stuff as well. And we'll talk about this North Carolina thing, which, Joel, I know you're a little hazy on, but I'm curious of your opinion on it. A lot of sports has happened over the past week. Of course, history could have been made this past weekend at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York, which is only... about an hour from where I am. California Chrome. I know we don't talk a lot of horse racing, but this would have been pretty legendary. Are you a horse racing guy, Joel?
Not too much.
Who really is, though? Unless you're, you know, 50 hanging out at OTBs.
Right. I've covered it, believe it or not. I can see the appeal of, you know, getting into it. I can see that, but it's not something that I can follow with any kind
right.
of regularity.
I don't think anybody really does. I try to. What's the track up in your neck of the woods? It's not Hawthorne, right? That's Chicago. What's the track in your up in your in the Detroit area? Is there a big?
Oh, honestly, Scott, I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know either. I know a few tracks. I had a buddy of mine that I used to work with was a big horse racing guy, and I've gone to Belmont a couple times. I kind of know my way, but not really. But this past weekend, history was almost made. When California Chrome was going for history, trying to become the first horse since Affirmed back in 1978 to win the Triple Crown, meaning, of course, the Kentucky Derby, the Belmont Stakes, and the Preakness. The this was not one of those years where you had a dominant horse. California Chrome was good, but not great. I think he was the best of mediocrity. Whoa, and music's playing in my ear. I don't know if you heard that, Joel. I'm sure it'll come up on that. But that's the way this... Honestly, that's the way this night's been. I think it's one of these ads on ESPN, those bastards. Now, in the last three Triple Crown winners, that was Secretariat in 73, Seattle Slough in 77, and Affirmed in 78, there were battles with good horses as well. It was very top-heavy. In this instance, California Chrome was kind of a horse with a lot of mediocre horses around it, and it didn't, you know, and people were like, well, he's the best of this bunch, so everything will be fine. Well, as usual, it's an extra quarter of a mile for Belmont. Belmont's a 1.5 mile track, whereas Churchill Downs and Pimlico are 1.25 miles. He finished fifth. And Tonalist, T-O-N-A-L-I-S-T, won the Belmont Stakes. I don't know if we'll ever see a Triple Crown horse, Joel. It's not, you know, it's not easy.
It's not, and I think you're right. I mean, I think that it's just going to be one of those things that, you know, just kind of gets buried and just nobody ever is going to catch it. Just, you know, because I think you're right. I mean, I think that, you know, from what I had seen and heard, you know, after Chrome won the first race, yeah, he's pretty much just kind of the best of a average lot. And, you know, I think it's hard to, you know, to get a horse that could do that for three straight races, and especially with the third one being longest. I mean, maybe if the first one were the longest, you'd see it. But with the current setup that they have, I don't think we'll ever see it happen.
I mean, for those that don't know, Secretariat was an amazing horse, one of the greatest, probably the greatest racing horse in the last 50 years. I mean, we had Man O' War and some of the other horses in the 40s, but in the 30s. But it also had a bigger heart than any other normal horse. I think its heart was twice the size, so it pretty much had a bigger engine. That's kind of why it was as great as it was. So anyway, California Chrome tried but failed. And I watched it, and I love how NBC was pumping everything up. They had Frank Sinatra Jr. singing New York, New York as California Chrome was walking out of the paddock. All this pomp and circumstance, and then it dumped, and then it's like, all right, time to go to hockey. That's what NBC pretty much did. Speaking of hockey, we are, of course, in the midst of the NHL's Stanley Cup Finals. Now, Joel, I'm going to be a nice guy because I know that my Bruins did beat your Red Wings in the first round. Not that that did anything good for me, because then the Bruins ended up losing in the next round to the Canadiens. We'll talk about your Red Wings in a moment. But the Cup Finals are the New York Rangers and the LA Kings. And on our next show, we'll probably have Todd Gessling on to talk a little finals hockey. By then, the finals may be over. In fact, they will be over, probably. And the first two games have definitely been indicative of the way the Kings play. Very fast. Now, the Rangers have had 3 2-goal leads in the two games combined. They were up 2-0 in game one and lost 3-2 in overtime. They had leads of 3-1 and 4-2 in game two, only to see the Kings tie it with 2 goals in the third period on Saturday night in game two, and then one in double overtime, 5-4. So the Kings lead 2-0 with a pair of OT wins. And by the time you hear this, game three would have happened. Game three was obviously at Madison Square Garden. In fact, the next two will be, so we'll see if the Rangers can rebound. Not sure how much you've paid attention, Joel. What are your thoughts? Have you caught any of the first two games of the Cup Finals?
I have not. I've been busy covering. We've got some baseball teams that are in playoffs and regionals and whatnot.
Oh, nice.
Out here, so
that's cool.
Yeah, it's a blast, but it keeps me, you know, kind of out of the loop as far as
right.
You know, that sort of stuff goes. But yeah, you know, from what I've seen, I mean, the Rangers and Kings deserve to be where they are. You know, from just kind of, you know, watching the Wings over the years and kind of being on the periphery of hockey, I highly doubt that this will be a four games, 4-0, done kind of thing.
Right.
The talk that I've heard is, that the Kings have gotten, I don't know if lucky is the right word, but they've certainly had the breaks, mm-hmm. I guess would be a good
thing. They have had a few breaks. In fact, I know there was a controversial goalie interference possibility that wasn't called in game two that led to a Kings goal. Mm-hmm. So there's been some issues there as well.
Yeah.
Do you follow the Red Wings? Obviously you do.
To a point. Me personally, I keep up with them, kind of watch them, here and there. But, generally speaking, the games to me are kind of background noise. I'll put it on if I need something. But,
right.
And I'll kind of pay attention to who's good. But it's definitely not a sweet spot for me.
Right.
Hockey's...
I feel like hockey has gained some popularity over the last few years. I mean, it's trying to. We've had some big market teams, the Bruins in 2011, Kings in 2012, the Blackhawks last year, and now we've got two major market teams again, the Rangers and the Kings. I think that's huge.
Oh, that definitely helps. That really spreads the game out. Detroit's, I would say a mid-sized market, even though it's called Hockey Town. People here love the Red Wings. I know people that'll wear a Red Wing shirt every day of the week if they can get away with it. But of course, it's not a major market like the size of New York or LA or Boston to be sure. So,
now the story that I wanted to talk to you about that came up, and I'm gonna bring it up with Andrew Reich in the next segment. Mm-hmm. Controversy is brewing in Chapel Hill at the University of North Carolina. Rashad McCants, who played on their 2005 national championship, that's a team that had Felton and Sean May, and they beat that great Illinois team in the national championship. It's coming out that he had tutors take tests for him, write papers for him. He barely went to classes. He went to, basket weaving and introduction to crayons and that kind of jazz. Mm-hmm. And eventually, he graduated with a 4.0. So they didn't even, if they were going to, I don't know what kind of grades he had in high school. And now he's coming out and saying that not only did that happen, but that head coach Roy Williams knew about it. And, of course, he wanted – at the time, Roy Williams had gone through his whole career without winning a national championship. He lost two or three championships at Kansas, so he was thirsting for one in 05. Don't know whether it'll be vacated or not. That would be ugly. You never want to see a national championship vacated.
Right.
Now, 2 years ago, the football team had a similar problem, and they were banned from postseason play. Being an academic, Joel, as you are, mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this situation?
It never should get to this level. It's something that, for anyone who doesn't know, in addition to sports writing, I also teach at a university in Michigan, and we have very strict policies about our academics, and essentially it boils down to, we teach a lot of international students, and it boils down to this: you cheat once, you fail the assignment; you cheat twice, you fail the class; you cheat a third time, you leave the country and go home. Obviously, that's a little bit different, but it should never get to this level. I know that basketball is a moneymaker for schools, and a lot of schools, they might look the other way for a paper here or paper there, but to look the other way for a whole semester and let this kid do what he did is just – it's unbelievable. It's unacceptable. And you really hope that somebody brings a hammer down on Williams. Like you said, Scott, it'd be a shame to have a national title vacated. But if that's their only option, then I think that's a realistic thing that could happen.
Hmm. Well, we'll see how time progresses. I like to have faith in humanity, and I like Roy Williams. I know that I've been on the, you know, in the past on both my show, on this show, and on the Place to Be podcast, I've goofed about my dislike for the ACC, but that's just because I'm a lover of the Big East. Mm-hmm. But I do like Roy Williams, and I hope this isn't true. We'll see what happens as it comes forward. Again, this was, you know, 9 years ago.
Right.
Now, usually, Joel, on the back end of our show, I give the doctor a chance to write a prescription for what ails our listeners. By the way, please email us, extrapoint@placetobenation.com. Any comments, questions, trivia, if you have any wrestling questions for Dr. G, you don't have to ask me. You hear me on plenty of shows talking wrestling. But we've never heard Joel talk about his love of professional wrestling. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a, as you've been so gracious to help me out in segment one here, Joel, I'm going to give you the opportunity to wax nostalgic.
All right,
about
sounds
your,
good.
About beloved wrestling. Give you a few minutes to kind of, you know, switch gears. Did you get to see Payback last Sunday?
Yeah, I saw about, I'd say, I think there were two matches I missed, but I caught just about all of it, either live or on replay. Yeah.
Right. Anything strike out at you? Did you watch the? What'd you think of the Cena Wyatt Last Man Standing? A lot of people loved it.
Yeah.
Others didn't. What did you think?
Good match. Probably one of the best Last Man Standing matches I've seen in a while. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a big fan of the sanitized version of that. I think if you're going to have a match like that, it needs to be, you know, bloody and whatnot. But that aside, you know, there's no change in that policy, so whatever.
Right. No.
I thought that was a good match. There's been a lot of talk of, oh, well, Cena won, of course, which, you know, is eye-rolling at this point. You know, of course he's going to win the blow-off. You know, my only issue was with the way the feud was booked. I thought the match was booked very well. I really enjoyed it. But my issue was more that whole program. I don't know how much they elevated Wyatt. They elevated him. I just don't know if they got to the top floor with him like they were hoping. And
well,
that's not his fault.
Well, there's rumors that he's actually going to turn babyface by the end of the year, so we'll see if that continues.
Yep, and that'll be fun. I think he's got the charisma to pull off either, which it sounds weird saying that about IRS's kid, but he could do it.
Right. What do you think of the six man elimination as Shield and Evolution?
That was fun. I mean, start to finish, just one of the funnest six man matches that I can remember seeing in a while. I mean, the Shield, that's their bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was great. Yeah, I thought it was a little strange at first. You know, they started out brawling, and then all of a sudden it goes to, well, hang on, we got to follow the rules for 5 minutes and actually tag.
Yeah, I know. Should have just made a tornado is what I think they should have done. They should have just all fought at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely, because that was the only part that was weird was because it was a brawl, then it was a regular follow the rules six-man tag, then it was a brawl again. And, yeah, I think if they just made it tornado from the start, you know, you take that hiccup out and – but I thought it was a great match. I loved the story. I loved how, Evolution, you know, kind of overmatched him a little bit. And then Rollins with that dive kind of, you know, that's the clear turning point. And from that point on, it's just, you know, the Shield get their wind and get their momentum back. And you know, the fact that they eliminated him 1, 2, 3, was really cool, and I loved how each member of the Shield got to eliminate a different member of Evolution. So it was a fun match. That was one of the best matches I've seen on a pay-per-view in a while.
Oh, okay.
It was really good.
One more thing before we go to break, and I'm going to expound on this with the guys on this coming week's episode of Place to Be Nation's main event. The reason I'm bringing it up to you, Joel, is because you're avatar on Skype is of the Macho Man Randy Savage, a personal Place to Be Nation favorite. You know that later this year, apparently, they're doing another DVD. Of course, they did that big set a while back of his a three-disc set of his matches. Well, this upcoming DVD is going to have a documentary and, you know, backstories and stuff. And apparently, from what I read, I saw it on Bleacher Report, which I always go, I take them with a grain of salt. They have good, they're good sports guys. Their wrestling stuff is hit or miss.
Right.
Apparently, we are finally going to get some kind of possible explanation on the on that whole urban legend about him and Stephanie McMahon. Mm-hmm. You know about that rumor, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That dirt,
yes.
That rumor that started eons ago.
Yeah.
And there's rumors that it goes back to him getting pissed off at Vince in 1987 because Vince did some Legends Battle Royal and didn't invite Angelo Poffo, which is obviously Savage's dad, to be in it, and this whole thing, and all this other jazz about not getting some other payoff or something, and I don't know. Did you ever believe that rumor? I didn't.
No.
Apparently Vince didn't find out about it until years later. I still don't believe it. How do you keep that? How does Stephanie keep that in the dark?
Yeah, that's to me, that's the key. I just, you know, it really seems like with what I know about the wrestling business behind the curtain, it really seems like that's something that if it legitimately happened, you know, there's no way that it would have been kept quiet from in this way. Like, I think Stephanie absolutely, something would have come up. Something
right.
would have been
had to have been
legitimized.
Yeah, how do you keep that in the dark? That just makes no sense.
Right.
So we'll see what happens when that DVD comes out later on in the year.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. It should be. It's just a shame that he's gone and he can't be a part of it because, man, that would just make it probably one of the greatest wrestling documentaries.
I know,
ever,
really.
But
there'll be a lot of stuff coming out of that.
Yeah.
There's got to be.
Yeah.
Joel, thank you for pinch hitting in this opening segment while the doctor's getting something fixed on the superhighway of the, I don't know if it's a Skype or the poor thing. Trust me, like I said, some of the days we had Place to Be podcast, Mr. Azzaro and I had to jerry-rig string and gum and tin cans too. So Joel will be back later on in the show for his usual baseball segment. But when we come back, I will be joined by Andrew Reich, the Bengal of the Bayou. We'll talk a little NBA Finals, Spurs and Heat. We'll talk playoffs in general, how they got there. And I'm going to ask him about this North Carolina Roy Williams situation as well. This is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, Episode 8. The Bengal of the Bayou, Mr. Reich, coming up next. Stay with us.
She's alone in the new pollution. She's got a paradise camouflage, like a whip crack sending me shiver.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to PCBN's Extra Point. The doctor had to step aside, but he'll be back for the next segment. And joining me now, as we are recording right now, Game 2 of the 2014 NBA Finals will be starting shortly between the San Antonio Spurs and the Miami Heat. Spurs taking Game 1 the other night, 110-95, at the sweltering AT&T Center in San Antonio. It looks like the air conditioning is fixed for Game 2 tonight. Obviously, a must-win for the Heat. Joining me right now is a guy who always brings the heat and everything else, the Bengal of the Bayou. It'll be the first of two times I'll be talking to my man this week. He'll be joining me later on this week for Episode 11 of Place to Be Nation's main event. He is a great contributor to PlaceToBeNation.com. He wrote a great piece this week on the finals. And he's getting ready for the draft, which comes up in a few weeks. And that's going to be pretty interesting. So, joining me is our hoop guru, Mr. Andrew Reich. Who, by the way, you know, Reich, I don't know if it was the last main event. I think it was the last main event where I got called out for allegedly calling you a Kentucky Wildcats fan. I think I was calling you a front runner, even though you don't even root for the Wildcats.
Well, I like Kentucky basketball more than LSU basketball. I actually kind of grew up watching Kentucky a lot more than LSU, because even though Shaq was there when I was a kid, LSU was pretty much in the doldrums by the time I started growing up, and Kentucky was the thing down south. So, and Arkansas, too, even though I will never, ever cheer for Arkansas. So, yeah, I'm kind of a Kentucky fan by proxy. You know, I'm kind of a bandwagon fan in many ways in other sports. I just kind of like hang on to whatever it is that's good, and I just drop it like a bad habit. So you're not too far off. You're not too far off. But when it comes to Kentucky, you know, I like Calipari, and I like the program. So,
you're
right on target with that.
Big contract you just signed, too.
Yeah, that was basically a please don't go to the NBA contract for the next year.
Why would he want to? When are a lot of coaches at a decent percentage, Reich, going to realize that a lot of times, you know, there's a certain way to coach college kids and a certain way to coach the pros. Some are good at one, some are good at the other. Lou Holtz is one of the greatest college football coaches in the history of the game. And in 1970, I believe he learned after 13 games coaching the Jets. Boy, this job sucks. And he went back. He went to where did he go? I think he went to – no, he didn't go to Clemson. Where did he go?
Did he go to Arkansas?
Arkansas, thank you. And then he went to Minnesota for a couple years.
Big statement.
And then he went to Notre Dame. So I don't think – him leaving would be ridiculous anyway, because he went to the Nets, was, mediocre at best? Do you think about that, Reich? Is the money that big a deal to some of these guys?
I don't think it's the money. I think because they can make just as much money at all these big conference schools as it is.
Look at Patino.
Especially kickbacks from extensions, exactly.
Well, look at Patino. He took that Celtics job after being at Kentucky and being a god there for digging him out of the death penalty.
Yeah.
And then he went to that, and that was the stupidest move he could have made. And fortunately, he rebuilt himself at Louisville, but... That was a dumb thing to do.
Every situation has its own circumstances. In the case of Patino, he got administrative power to go with the coaching, which is what made it attractive for him. But, you know, I think we are not seeing college coaches go to the NBA nearly as often as we saw it in the late 90s and in the early 2000s, when you saw so many guys like Lon Kruger, even Larry Brown, who was a college coach, going to the NBA. Now, he was successful because he had been an NBA coach before then. But a lot of these guys, like, you know, Roy Williams got has gotten offers so many times and just never took it. Right. Krzyzewski came very close to going to the Lakers back in 2004.
Yes.
And, you know, we already talked about Rick Pitino. And the new ones that we hear about right now are Fred Hoiberg over at Iowa State and Kevin Ollie at
UConn.
They just won the national title. But I think the reason why those guys are getting looks at the NBA is, do you fit the pro system? And those two guys are former players that know how to run an NBA offense.
Right.
And I think that's what makes them attractive to some of these NBA organizations, where it's a lot of these college coaches, when they get hired, it's – especially like when Lon Kruger got hired out of Illinois, it was just like, fucking what? Like,
yeah.
You hired basically a rah-rah college coach who at his very best could get a team to like the Elite Eight or the Final Four, and you're asking him to coach a really, really terrible Atlanta Hawks team. But I don't know. It's a common – and I remember when Mike Dunlap got the job with the Bobcats a few years ago. I just think it's a combination of either bad decision-making by the general manager or the owner and college coaches just looking to challenge themselves and see if they can really do it. Like Nick Saban had the same quandary when he left LSU. He really wanted to see if he could be an NFL coach, and he failed. And now he's at Alabama, and he's sitting pretty on top of the mountain. So
yep.
It's just a combination of things. Every circumstance is different for every coach, depending on the length of their contract, their relationship with the school. But at the end of the day, you're right. Unless it's like a Pete Carroll, Jim Harbaugh, best case scenario type of situation, almost 90% of the time those coaches fail.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Roy Williams in a little bit, because I know you know about that situation that just popped up.
The Rashad McCants thing.
Which I think is the whole thing is just a
mess.
You
know how they say where there's smoke, there's fire? Where there's ash, there's definitely fire.
Yeah.
And now there's so much proof that these guys got, you know, fail-safe classes. It's starting to get really sad.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a little bit. Let's talk about the playoffs in general. You and I haven't talked. We haven't talked since early in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Heat. Who got to the finals after taking out Charlotte comfortably, and then they took out Brooklyn pseudo comfortably, mm-hmm. and then they took out that overachieving dumpster fire that's the Indiana Pacers. I'm just so pissed off at them, but we'll get to them in a minute.
I am a little bit. Sorry.
What are your thoughts on this, on the path the Heat took? Do you think it was easier than people thought, or do you think everyone knew they were good? And do you think? Let me ask you this, two-parter, Reach. Okay. Number one, do you think they coasted through the regular season? And number two, what are your thoughts on their road to where they are now?
The answer to the first question is they definitely coasted in the regular season, because Dwayne Wade got put basically on like a recycling plan where they decide, okay, we're not gonna have Wade waste his legs and his knees and his energy on worthless March, January, February regular season games that we could probably win with just Bosch and LeBron on their own. So they definitely sacrificed, I want to say, at least 10 or 8 losses. You know, instead of turning into a 60-win team or 64-win team, they were more in the vein of like a 58-win team or 56-win team with the roster they had. So they definitely coasted a little bit. Even LeBron, to me, took a lot more days off during the game. Even while playing, I still felt like LeBron took more games off than he usually does, because he's such an efficient player. They're still able to win most of those games. The answer to the second question is, I don't know if it was as easy as people thought, but it seemed easier than I thought, because when you look at the track of these teams that win two titles in a row, and I wrote this in my article, the third one is always the toughest one in the conference playoffs, because all these teams, the third time around, they usually play a team in the conference finals that knows them like the back of their hand, or they have already bumped into at least one time. And that team is always ready to go and ready to challenge them. For reasons, and I'll give you an example. The Knicks with the Bulls in 1993, and the Kings with the Lakers in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the Pacers is that it seemed like we were getting ready for that same exact scenario, and it just didn't pan out.
Right.
And you could blame the Pacers for just having shitty chemistry and not being able to really pull through late in the season to play their best basketball. Or you could just say that the Heat just flipped the switch on and really just took it to the Pacers. I think it was more of just the Pacers not being ready, because I didn't think the Heat even played that well in the series outside of the elimination game where they just – fucking trounced them.
Yeah.
But to me, I was shocked how smooth of a sailing it was in the Eastern Conference playoffs. for the Heat, even though the Eastern Conference this year was very bad, I thought at least one of those series was going to be a 6 or 7 game series, and it just wasn't. It was just total destruction.
So, on the other side of the coin, you had the Spurs, who, and I was out with my brother the other night, who became a displaced, a placed Spurs fan, living a year in San Antonio, and he dumped the Knicks. And I give him crap about that all the time. I have a lot of respect, as much as I really am not a huge Spurs fan, being, of course, a fan of the purple of the Palace of Westwood, as I call the Lakers. I will give a lot of credit to Pop, as my brother and the Spurs fans comfortably call him. He is a great game manager, and he's a great roster manager. Because, I mean, obviously, Reesh, we have some very old legs on this team. I always just say this to Dr. G about the Devils. I always felt they were old, and they always made it to either the Stanley Cup Finals or at least the Eastern Conference Finals. But
as an aside, I don't watch hockey. Those first two games of Stanley Cup Finals have been fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, they have been. My brother's been upset about. He's a Ranger fan, and they're not playing. You know, these are not Ranger games. So Game 3 tomorrow night at the Monday night at the Garden. They've got
to
be
say,
on.
Not to say that the NHL gimmicked it, but to have two big markets like that and to have a really great Stanley Cup final with the ratings going up the way they have for on NBC for the NHL, this is about as good as it gets.
Well, that's why the and I talked about it with Dr. G in segment one. That's why the Belmont Stakes started like half an hour later than normal. Usually the Belmont goes off at like 6:25, 6:27. Yeah, and yeah. NBC does it, but they went off at 6:52 because Game 2 was starting at 7. So they were hoping for a big. Of course, California Chrome didn't win, but they won a nice lead-in.
Can we stop with the Triple Crown? It's never going to happen.
Well, that's a
whole
other
pitch. It's like pitch count in the new century. There's just no horses that can last like that.
Well, I think California Chrome, I think everybody realized, was kind of a mediocre horse in a crappy field, and they thought he could get away with it. But when he turned that last corner, you know, Belmont. For the, if you don't know, you know, Belmont's track is 1.5 miles, whereas the Derby and the Preakness, it's 1.25 miles. So. That's why it's always a bitch to win, because you got to go an extra quarter of a mile, and a lot of horses can never take it. But anyway, that's a different discussion.
Yeah, we went from Greg Popovich to talking about the glue factory.
Yeah, the glue factory, yeah. Because they're all going to be off to stud anyway. But
yeah, speaking of glue, we need the glue to attach all these arthritic joints to these Spurs teams.
But I tell you, they move around. They move around with the ball. They've had a pretty good postseason. We'll talk about some of the other teams that disappointed, because next to Indiana, no one was more disappointing than Oklahoma City. But we'll get to them, too. Your thoughts on the Spurs heading up to this point?
You know, a lot of stuff in the NBA is from in terms of X's and O's. I was talking to a friend about this, and he's impassioned about European influence in terms of running different offensive and defensive sets in the NBA. And I think he does have a point. But dude, does anybody run those types of offensive sets and curls and hammer plays and all these other and the loop play that they run for Parker? Pick and roll with Duncan. Does anybody run that stuff at such an efficient and no bullshit rate as the Spurs do? They just seem to just get in the zone. It's almost like the Patriots, where it don't matter who you put in the Tom Brady, or even the Saints with Drew Brees. It don't matter who you put in there. If they have the big guy or if they have the quarterback to run that offense, it's going to go just fine. And it just seems like with the Spurs, no matter who you put in there with Duncan and Parker, even Ginobili can be out of the equation. I've seen games where Ginobili stunk, and the Spurs did just fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing is, let's go way back. We'll go back to where the Spurs won their first four titles. Right. They won their first four titles. They had a decent, efficient offense in a ways, but they won those titles with defense. They were a rock hard, fundamentally sound, pound you in the paint defensive team.
Right.
And now they've turned the corner in the new century because they had to get rid of guys like Bruce Bowen and Robert Horry and Brent Barry and
Bruce Bowen. I hated Bruce Bowen.
And his ugly bow tie.
Oh my God. And his dirty defense.
Yeah, his dirty defense. And they had to replace that with guys like Danny Green, you know, Gary Neal who left there last year. Kawhi Leonard, who I just love.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they've been able to turn the focus on the offensive side of the ball and really dial that in and harness it into this locomotive of an offense that you just can't put away. You know, you could slow them down. You can force turnovers like Miami did in Game 1, mm-hmm. which is they did that really well. because Miami's got a fast, you know, over-helping type of defense.
Right.
But it's still not going to help you because in the fourth quarter, you know, LeBron got the cramps. But they scored 36 fucking points. You know, they missed two shots, and they went 6 for 6 from the three-point line. How do you beat that?
And it was LeBron being out making
You would have to have a 15-point lead going into the fourth quarter to win that game.
And would was LeBron being – and we're going to get to the whole we're going to get to the whole air conditioning thing in a minute. But that aside, was LeBron being out that big a difference? I mean, come on. Really? I mean, this really exploits them as – I mean, they're not like the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls won games when Michael played like crap.
They won 7 games with the Knicks with Scottie Pippen.
Yeah, they won games when Michael played like – not that Michael played like crap very often, particularly in the playoffs. He hardly ever did because it's Michael. He's a stud.
Oh, yeah. I know. The theory that we cop out to all the time that Michael was great in every game, bullshit.
No, he had some stinkers.
I could tell you in the whole 1996 finals where he was the MVP. He certainly had a couple good ones, but I can remember two or three where he was awful, including the famous game where he won the fourth title for his father. Michael did not play great. You know, Gary Payton was on him, and he didn't play well. And it's just – I'm not trying to pick on Michael Jordan. That's impossible.
No, no, but my point is I wish we would – and we'll get, and again, I want to talk about the air conditioning thing because this is coming from a Laker fan who went through the 80s when the Celtics turned off the air conditioning on purpose. But,
oh.
But
maybe someone turned off the hold dial.
But I mean, look, that Heat team – first of all, the Heat's bench is brutal.
Bad.
It is bad. Mm-hmm. And the Spurs bench is fantastic. But again, that's Popovich. He gave these guys a lot of experience, a lot of playing time this season, gave them legs. And by the way, does Tiago Splitter look like Dwayne Tsintsis without the mullet?
Dwayne Tsintsis passed away, didn't he?
No. Did he really?
You might have to look it up for me because I don't have internet right now. But
I'll check it on Wikipedia. Well, I apologize. Well, I mean, and I'm not. I mean, look, Dwayne Tsintsis was a decent player.
He had a buzz cut, right?
But he had a mullet.
He had a mullet.
He played on the '94 Florida team that stunned UConn.
I might be mixing it up. With
you might be thinking of Ostertag.
Oh yeah, I love this.
Those big 7-foot guys.
Why Ostertag was hilarious. Jerry Sloan would always put him at the corner of the 3-point line on purpose, so that if Shaq was in the lane with Ostertag so far away, it'd be an automatic illegal defense. So he would put Ostertag. His only job when he played the Lakers was put him at the corner three, so that Shaq couldn't be called for illegal defense back when that was still a rule. Now there is no such thing as illegal defense, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, Ostertag was pretty worthless.
Yeah. Anyway, I think the defense, the Heat defense just melted. I mean, does he make that big a difference, LeBron? But I mean, he still had 20 something points, and maybe if they had gotten a bigger lead in the third quarter, you know, things might have been different. But
at that, I wanted to say what happened with the Heat is this: their defense, like I just mentioned, they have a very finesse defense. They're mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to say it's similar to, like, the Seahawks, because the Seahawks are strong and fast. But the Heat are more of a quick, like I said, overhelp type of defense. They like to kind of run at you in quick spurts,
right,
and try to get steals and try to fool you into taking a bad shot or convincing or giving you an open shot that might not be as good, and then run you out.
Right.
The problem was that they got the turnovers in the third quarter. They got like 9 or 11 turnovers in the third quarter alone, but mm-hmm. they could not get anything in transition. And maybe it was LeBron slowing down a little bit on some of those transitions. I think it was because the Spurs, despite the turnovers, did a very good job of wheeling back on defense and not letting the Heat just get runouts on easy dunks and layups. They made it at least a little tough on them to get offense going when Miami stole the ball, which is, you know, smart on the Spurs part for making even in the act of making a mistake. The Spurs are still smart enough to know, okay, now we got to go to plan B. With Miami in the fourth quarter, it seemed like on offense they just didn't have a plan B.
Right.
You know, it was LeBron, even after the cramps, he came in, he made a beautiful layup right off the dribble, and I could tell you this, cuz you know, my calf muscles, I've had Charlie horses in my calf.
Oh, so have I. Oh, yeah.
I know. I mean, I don't have the most beautiful calves in the world. I don't have like Lex Luger calves, but I don't have Triple H's calves or his thighs. But
no one does. No. It's
hashtag inside joke.
Yes,
hashtag
exactly. Main event.
But no, the thing is, when I was looking at his calves when he was standing there, I was thinking, oh, that's a Charlie horse.
Yeah, that looks like a grapefruit.
Yeah, those muscles looked just, it was like, ugh, yuck. Like, those things are ugly to watch. And when he got out, the offense just sputtered. And Dwayne Wade, who was getting nice openings because of LeBron's presence, all of a sudden Wade was being double-teamed, and he was having trouble finding open shooters, and then the Spurs just feasted on him.
Now, you and I may differ on this. I don't know. I know we were talking before we went on the air. I didn't have an issue. Of course, in case anyone doesn't know, but midway through the third quarter in Thursday night's game one, the air conditioning broke down at the AT&T Center in San Antonio. They kept playing. LeBron got cramps with about three and a half minutes left. He had to leave the game. And, you know, everyone thinks that's why the Spurs won. Coming from a Laker fan who played three NBA finals in the 80s at the Boston Garden, where the Celtics used to turn the air off on purpose, you know, and Celtic fans can argue, but they all know it's the truth.
I still wonder how true that really was, though.
Well, the air conditioning, it was hot there. I mean, there were stories, James Worthy, but Celtics fans knew it, too. That place was a sauna. Mind you, the building was, you know, 90 years old or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry. I don't think they should have kept playing. It happens. Now, I think David Stern had a motive. I mean, you know, Lakers-Celtics drama makes for good money, makes for good TV ratings. CBS was making a killing at the time, so
it adds to the mythos.
Exactly, it adds to the urban legends of Lakers Celtics. I have no problem with it. I don't think they should have stopped the game. You know what? It's a little warm. You're all million-dollar athletes. Used to play out, and you know, I remember in Harlem at Rucker Park, I think it's the Bronx, right? Anyway, Rucker Park in the city, New York. You've heard of Rucker Park.
Don't ask me any difference between New Jersey.
Yeah,
and
you don't know anything. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know
the Barclays Center in Chicago. but I've watched guys play there, and it's 100 degrees, and they're playing in it too. So I don't feel any sympathy. And by that, and it's not like LeBron left the game with 11 minutes left. He left the game with 3.5 minutes left. So I'm sorry. And if it was any other guy like Mario Chalmers or something, who was going to give a crap? No one was going to say anything. I think it's just because it's LeBron. Kind of like when A-Rod's the one that whose ball had to hit the camera in game three of the 2009 World Series. Of course, it had to be A-Rod whose ball hit it. Couldn't have been some schlub. Same thing on – I know you slightly disagree with me, but I'm sorry. They should have just kept playing. Too bad.
The thing of it is this, is that, you know, you make good points there, you know, and then, you know, this is a nation for football, and in football, you know, we don't stop for anything, rain, sleet, snow, or nothing. So maybe it speaks to us as, you know, I'm trying to use the right word, maybe the spoilification of society in terms of sports in general, where we've taken pro sports and we've basically spoiled these athletes and put them in a micro setting where everything is set up for them in a perfect sense, and when one thing falls apart, it seems like everything falls apart, or it's easier to pick on that one thing for not working. Are you following what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, no, I do.
Like I think we're at a point where these pro athletes are so used to preset conditions and sort of accepted modifications. You know, in terms of fouls and what's a flagrant foul and being able to get some assistance there, that when they play in an indoor arena like that with 20 to 25,000 people and the air conditioning breaks and all of a sudden you're a professional athlete and you're playing in like 90 to 95 degree heat possibly on the court, it might be a little disconcerting for a lot of these players who grew up in an era where they probably never had to do that. Now, maybe Ray Allen said he loved it. You know, Ray Allen's, you know, he played high school in the early 90s. You know, a lot of these guys probably had to play in hot-ass gyms in high school and AAU ball. And you're right, because it happened to LeBron, it seems to get a little bit more of that attention. If it had happened to Norris Cole, I don't think anybody would have really bothered with it too much. It may have been just a side story. But because it happened to LeBron, and because LeBron's had a history of cramping up, it's now turning into a storyline where, okay, it's not just the air conditioning, it's LeBron. I would have made the case that if they would have been able to mechanically fix the air conditioning in due time, say about maybe 10 to 20 minutes. They should have at least delayed the game to see if they could do it. But I see why the NBA did it, because if the NBA, if they had delayed it to try to fix the AC and didn't, it would have looked even worse.
Right.
Because now you're trying to fix a problem that you know you can't fix until the next day, and what are you going to do? Just cancel a game? This ain't fucking baseball. You know, right. you got to keep playing. So in that case, you do make a point. You got to play the game. You got to get through it. I just wish they'd have had at least – they would have at least made some sort of a modification where they said, okay, we need to just look and see if we can fix this, because you're watching all those fans just fanning themselves. And I'm not trying to make it out like these fans went through fucking – you know, walked through fucking Nigeria. You know, they weren't walking through the jungle of – the jungles of Africa with a sweltering heat pouring down their face.
Right.
It was – it's just an uncomfortable scenario that I would not wish on a player, even if it's something that they may have been used to when they were younger.
Right. All right, quick answer, because we have a little bit of time, and I want to get into a couple other topics. At the moment, as it stands right now, who's winning the NBA title?
I think the Spurs are going to win in 7 games. I think that home court's going to save them. And I think, even though I wrote an article late last year saying that the going to the 2-2-1-1-1 is not going to, you know, change too much in terms of the overall result, these finals, compared to the other one, which was 2-3-2. Mm-hmm. I do think having that Game 5 and that Game 7 potentially at San Antonio is what's going to save them.
Okay. All right. Quick talk of the draft in a few weeks in the city. The Cavaliers, for the 3rd time in 4 years, like, that's not rigged. It has the number 1 pick.
You know what was sad about that? It wasn't even, like, the anger there wasn't even that it was rigged. It was just, like, why them? Like,
it's the LeBron pity thing. It's the I'm sorry for the decision.
It's the apology tour.
Yeah, it's like after Brett lost to Yokozuna at WrestleMania 9, and then he got, like, the, oh, we screwed that up, and so he won the belt at WrestleMania 10.
You know how those guys get their teardrop on the cheek for a tattoo?
Yeah.
It kind of feels like that with Cleveland.
Yeah. Who do you
just
at the moment?
Build a teardrop.
Yeah, we'll have you back on. Maybe we'll have you back on our next show.
Yeah, we'll talk draft. Let's talk about that Clipper sale.
All right. Steve Ballmer is the new owner of the Clippers. Now, here's an interesting scenario. It's almost like Donald Sterling is still getting rewarded. He's like, all right, I screwed up. I talk like an idiot, but hey, I'm getting $2 billion. I don't have to worry about this stupid team anymore.
It's complicated because, you know, Shelley was strong-armed into making a deal before the week of the owners' meeting, in which they would have likely voted the Sterling family out of the clause to own the Clippers, and it would have basically gone up for auction. The whole franchise would have gone up for auction. So Shelley and her people decided, okay, I'm going to find a way to take majority control of the team via family trust, and I'm going to sell this team to make money for the family before the team is taken away from me by rules of ownership,
right?
By bylaw. So basically, Shelley was able to get control of it through some sort of ruling that I don't even know what arbitrator did this, whether it was NBA related or some other different healthcare clinic decided that Donald Sterling's mentally incompetent. So Shelley took the wheel, and she drove that thing into a money pit, because now she's got – I don't know how much of that majority of the money is going directly to the Sterling that Steve Ballmer sold. But, you know, as a side comment, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Shelley was able to get that $2 billion. Now, the other clause in there is that if Donald Sterling sues the NBA, which I don't know if he's withdrawn that lawsuit yet – is that
I think he did.
You think he
I
did?
I think he did, yeah.
And the reason why is that if Sterling had won that lawsuit, the $2 billion would go back to the NBA. The NBA would take control of it. Now, I don't know how much of that percentage actually of the $2 billion actually goes to the Sterlings.
Right.
And how much percentage goes to the league for
– I don't know.
For operating fees or whatever the case may be. But I guess what will happen now is that Sterling will try to get back into the good graces of Shelley. I don't want to say in her good graces, maybe with her good graces.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
but try to ease his way back in so that he could at least get a cut of that $2 billion. And he's going to be dead within about 10 years anyway. Mm. So he's 82 years old. So I don't know where, maybe he wants at least an idea, he wants a say in where the money's going to go now that they've run into this huge pot of money. And that is the whole end game for these ownerships. And the ownerships is not just, they always talk about how they run at an operating loss. You know, the whole lockout, the complaint with the owners, and some of it was rightfully so, was, well, it's not a 50-50 split. The players get more revenue than we do, and we're losing money to operate these teams, and they were crying about that for the entire lockout.
Right.
What I understand with the anger on the player side is that you're saying that you're crying everybody a river about how much money you lose to operate these teams, yet you purchase these teams at maybe in the early 2000s, they were probably buying these teams at about a $400 million rate. Maybe the richest franchise was the Lakers or the Knicks, and they were probably valued about $500 million.
Yeah, it's going to be ridiculous now.
I'm talking about 2004. Now, you're telling me that you're going to be crying about losing money, yet if you sell out now, and the Bucks owner, Herb Cole, got $550 million, you're telling me that you're crying about losing money, and you just got $1 billion to $2 billion on a sale? That is
for a team that, let's be honest, Reesh, is not worth $2 billion.
No, they had Chris Paul fall into their lap at the same time that Blake Griffin was the rookie of the year.
Because the Lakers, who were probably, who could be worth $2 billion.
And we know how this goes, Scott. We've watched the NBA for years. Good follows good.
Right.
And wherever the good players go, the good teammates go, and the good coaches will want to coach the good players, and they'll stay good until there's a disastrous type of event or a player wants out of that organization and everything falls apart. That's just the cycle of it all. That's how it works. But what I'm saying is that if Steve Ballmer is willing to pay $2 billion out of his money and Mikhail Pokeroff is willing to pay $60 to $70 million over the salary cap in order to try to make their teams good, even in the event that they don't win the championship, what is going to stop these owners from overspending over their cap in order to make these teams better? What it means is that the 2011 lockout and collective bargaining agreement, in which the owners were trying to make all these bullet points about why they need to, you know, to kind of bring down the salary levels, now it's starting to look like a bit of a Trojan horse.
Right.
Now you're saying, okay, we're not going to be we can't make money operating the way you are. Oh, well, that's fine. Yet you're going to put owners into that seat that are willing to pay way over the salary cap into the luxury tax to make these teams good. Maybe for the have-nots, those are the owners that are saying that they're losing money, and I understand that point of view. But for these guys like Steve Ballmer, Mikhail Pokeroff, James Dolan, the Buss family, you just can't buy me on that, because if this guy buys this team for almost 75% more than what it was actually worth via Forbes, I don't know where that money is going to be coming from for the player side when the owners say, no, we need more money on our side in the next collective bargaining negotiation.
All right. My data overages, thanks to that answer, means that I'm broke. So thanks for that.
Basically, you know, the owners can't keep crying foul.
Okay.
The owners have to stop crying foul over losing money running NBA organizations, because now maybe because of Steve Ballmer's overbuy, everybody is going to be in on either selling their franchises for big bucks before they can get out, or they're going to be operating at a way, way higher fee in order to make their teams better as soon as possible.
All right. Before we start teaching macroeconomics, you have 60 seconds or I'm just hanging up on you.
Okay.
Your quick thoughts on this whole McCants, Carolina, Roy Williams debacle.
It's obvious that something was going on in North Carolina with the basketball program, and it shouldn't shock anybody because Butch Davis and John Blake were doing the same exact thing with the football program. It usually goes side by side with the football program and the basketball program at the same time. I've never seen any athletic program in the NCAA where the basketball program is squeaky clean, but the football program is completely filthy and dirty. They usually go hand in hand.
Exactly.
So I would have to anticipate that all these student athletes in North Carolina in the late 2000s were all getting preferential treatment through their classes and getting easy 2+2=4 type of courses in order to just keep on going so that they don't have to worry about college and just worry about playing the game, which is what big money college sports is all about anyway.
Right.
So Roy Williams trying to cover it up makes it look worse, though. That was a mistake by him.
Well, you're the man, as always. Thank you, Andrew Reich. I'll talk to you later on in the week for episode 11 of Place to Be Nation's main event. Thank you, sir. When we return, the doctor will be with us. He'll be back, and we'll also be joined by Extra Point baseball analyst Joel Barnhart to talk about his power rankings and what's going on in Major League Baseball. Joel, up after this. For the pink and poo-poos, I thought you knew two stone styles of stamina, jamming a while we planning a jam. We bust, plus with a party amateur damages, managing damage and mice, men, and even... What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sports podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's main event.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Welcome back to our newest episode of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I am Scott Criscolo, flying solo tonight. We thought the doctor's been having some, I think the internet connection needs a doctor tonight, so he's been having issues all night. So the doctor, trying to work that out, but he'll be back on, of course, with our next show. So joining us right now is one of my favorite people. He is Place to Be Nation Extra Point's baseball analyst. He had a great column on PlaceToBeNation.com talking about his power rankings, and he also did a piece on Masa, my hero, as my PIC on the Place to Be podcast calls him, Tanaka, and then he lost. So I think Justin Rosero made a voodoo doll of him. He is, again, contributor to PlaceToBeNation.com. He's also a well-renowned newspaper writer, Mr. Joel Barnhart. Joel, welcome back.
Hey, Scott. How's it going, man?
I am well. I think the doctor's internet connection has been Nathaned.
I would have to agree with you. It's just completely Nathaned out.
We'll talk about that in a minute. By the way, again, check out his Joel's Power Rankings piece on PlaceToBeNation.com. It is fantastic. And let's talk about some of the teams. Now, you wrote this earlier in the week, so obviously some of the records have changed, obviously, but as of right now, the team you have at the top of your rankings are the Oakland A's. Actually, you have a couple of Bay teams at the top. You have the A's and you have the Giants. Let's talk about the Giants, because I watched a little of them this past weekend as they swept my absolutely hideous Mets. What has been the deal with the Giants and their resurgence? Start off a little slow in April. In May, they were consistent, but end of May, they really kicked it into high gear. 8 of 10. They're playing great at home and on the road. What has it been for the Giants right now?
Well, they're just doing everything. You know, in the month of June so far, they're hitting. They're fifth in baseball with a .276 average for the month. Their pitching's been great for the month of June. They're right around three, and in May they were, I believe, just even better than that. I mean, they've just done everything right. They don't have superstars in the traditional sense. I mean, I guess Buster Posey maybe makes the cut, but yeah, they just seem to have this really fun group of players that are just doing everything well. Their pitching is great, their hitting is great, and their defense has been really solid too. I think coming into the season, you know, we expected the pitching and the defense to be okay, but the offense was kind of the question mark, and so far it's been outstanding.
Mm. Now, the Dodgers, who are fighting the Giants in the West and will probably fight them all year long, they've been okay. I mean, Josh Beckett threw a no-hitter. Mm-hmm. In May, they were .500. Puig's been hitting the hell out of the ball. But what have the struggles been for the Dodgers in which they have fallen behind the Giants?
Well, you know, it's just they've been inconsistent. I mean, you know, Puig has been phenomenal, and even that, I think, doesn't do him justice. But, I mean, their pitching has been, you know, it's been okay. Nothing outstanding outside of Beckett and a couple starts from Ryu. But for the month of May, you know, they were .500. Their ERA was .380, which, you know, in this day and age, that's pretty high. For a month, no matter who you are, and they're not really playing great defense. You know, they're just kind of, you know, being out in here in Michigan, I don't really watch them as much as I'd like to, but I just get the impression that this is a team that's just kind of waiting for their talent to kick in. Maybe we bought into the hype a little too much. Maybe we thought everybody would have a career year, but they are just not playing well. They've got a logjam in the outfield. Kemp certainly can't be happy about what's going on. Not that he's the answer, but
right.
You know, but it feels like that team's either going to explode and go on a tear and really make this a fun race, or they're just going to implode and be one of the most expensive disasters that we've seen in a long time.
Staying on the Bay, obviously the team you have number one in your power rankings, the Oakland A's, .755 OPS, .293 ERA. This was as of earlier in the week. Obviously, it's fluctuated, but at the time. Great defense, tied for first. Josh Donaldson, 12 game-winning RBIs. What's working in Oakland?
I think the question really is there anything not working?
Yeah, really.
I mean, they're just getting production out of just about everywhere. I mean, you know, Donaldson is a possible MVP candidate. Catcher Derek Norris has just really blossomed. He's got an on-base percentage of like .400.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brandon Moss at first base has really kind of nailed that position down, really made it his own after a couple years of being the left side of a platoon. They're getting good defense up the middle, you know, with Sogard and Lowry and Gentry. And, you know, Cespedes and Reddick, they're not hitting for average, but they're getting hits when they need to, and the pitching staff's been amazing. And I think that may be the biggest surprise, given that, you know, going into the year, they lost their top two starters over, you know, what was it, a couple weeks, Parker and Griffin. So for this team to be, you know, sitting in first place with, you know, pretty much top of the league in almost everything, it's remarkable. I mean, it really says a lot about the way that the philosophy of how to build a team and not really get caught up in you know, what's our payroll? Who's our top superstar? What's, you know, what's going to bring fans out to the ballpark? Because I, you know, I mean, the answer is you win, and that's all you got to do. And
right.
I mean, that seems to be their abiding philosophy is, you know, don't get wrapped up in dollars and cents and overpaying for one guy. Just bring in good players, let them play, and just get out of the way before the buzzsaw hits you.
Yeah. They seem to be a good team. Like, there's definitely a good team concept.
Yeah, absolutely. There. Absolutely. And I don't know, you know, to credit Billy Bean or Bob Melvin or both. I mean, I think something like that is probably just all around. It probably even goes back to, you know, those players being coached in Little League, too, where, you know, it seems like they've got a real good chemistry. You know, just guys that know what to do and don't get caught up in, you know, in trappings and in, you know, any kind of controversies. They just go out, do their job, and, you know, and they've been great at it. If I was making a World Series pick, I would probably pick them right now. They're just unstoppable.
Hmm. Even more than your Tigers? They had a pretty lousy May. They had a mediocre May. I mean, Verlander almost over 5.5 ERA. Scherzer almost 4.
Right.
We've talked about the closer. By the way, did you see what the Mets did to your former closer?
Yes, I did. I don't remember the last time I saw a guy literally walk off the field into the unemployment line like that.
We're talking, of course, about Jose Valverde, a hunk of chunk.
Yeah, it's pretty astounding when that happens. It's rare, but you know, I mean, we can let's finish up and we'll get to the Tigers. But yeah, it's been a rough patch.
Mm.
It's been a rough patch.
Yeah, another team that was scorching hot in the month of May. We got to talk about the Blue Jays. 21 out of 30. They beat the snot out of the ball. Edwin Encarnacion, 16 homers. Mark Burley, 9-1. I don't know how long that's going to last, though. I don't know if they're going to. This is a little different. Like, Oakland was hot because they're good. I think the Blue Jays had 30 good days. I don't think they're going to keep it up. What do you think?
You know, I don't know. I could see them hanging around. I agree with you. They're not gonna keep doing what they did in May. That's unbelievable. There's no way they're gonna do that. But I could see them hanging around, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, Encarnacion was amazing in the month of May, but you know, they have Melky Cabrera, who, you know, hit 8 home runs in May and is having a good season. Bautista's doing well. Francisco, when he's been playing, has been hitting some homers. I mean, this is a team that I do think they can hang around. Again, they're not going to go 21-9 every month.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that they could hang around. I think they probably do need to add a pitcher at the deadline if they can, a starter. James Shields would be a great fit. But you know, they're in the driver's seat in that division now, and honestly, I think they could end the season at winning that division. But you know, then we get to the playoffs, and that's a different story. But but I think they're for real. They're not, you know, they're not for 21-9 real, but they're for real.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Now, the rest of that division has been interesting. The Yankees have been Jekyll and Hyde. The hitting has not been there. But I tell you, if it wasn't for three guys, Tanaka, Solarte, or as Justin likes to call him, Solarte, or and Jacoby Ellsbury, who's hitting like 280, but he's still been one of the most consistent hitters in the lineup. The Yankee team could be like in last compared to the way everybody else has been playing.
Yeah, absolutely. They really have struggled, which, you know, I don't think that was I think that you know, right now they're 500. I think that's right about where they should be, mm-hmm. For better or worse. I mean, they, you know, we had questions coming in about their defense. You know, the pitching staff outside of Tanaka. I mean, that's just. I mean, it's like just a big mess. I mean, I can't name a starter other than Tanaka or Kuroda that they have currently. That's.
Yeah, I mean, Sabathia's on the DL. They have the kid, what's his name, Headley?
Yeah.
Headley got a win the other night. In fact, he's the only guy that won. I mean, they lost 2 out of 3 this past weekend of the Royals. Yeah. And I think he's the only one that got a win.
Right, and, you know, you shouldn't be, if you're a contender, you should be taking 2 out of 3 from the Royals. You know, not the other way around.
Yeah.
This is not a team that's, you know, that's, I don't see them going places. Too old. That infield defense is abysmal, and they might sneak in as a second wild card, but they're not going to make too big of waves this year, I don't think.
Now, another team in that division that has been fairly brutal, and I can't believe I'm not surprised because I talked about them in the preseason. And that is the Red Sox, who have gone through like this weird stretch. They lost 10 in a row,
mm-hmm.
then they won 7 in a row, and now I think they've lost 6 in a row. I mean, they've been completely Jekyll and Hyde. They're playing you guys, your Tigers on ESPN at the moment. I think it's 2-2. Although I thought I saw Miguel Cabrera get hurt or left a game. I don't know if you saw that.
I've got it on my phone. He left the game. It's tied at 2 in the 7th. So, Boston's been. I think you're right with that Jekyll and Hyde thing. They, you know, they're good, then they're bad, then they're good, then they're bad. And, I think just kind of like the Yankees, this is a team that. They just don't have the right mix this year. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just...
Right.
I mean, I think last year they were good, but they also were a little lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I think this year they're just, you know, they're not getting in their own way, but, I mean, like, guys that should be hitting aren't. Guys that played really well last year have dropped off. They really miss Ellsbury. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jackie Bradley Jr.'s hitting .174. I don't care how good a defense you play in center field, and I don't have any clue what his defensive metrics look like, but if you hit .174, you're not gonna stick around.
No.
This is just a team, you know, and the pitching is mediocre, at best. PV and Lackey are, you know, they're basically middle of the road starters. They're guys that you would chuck out there and say, hey, give us 6 innings and give up, you know, less than 4 and we'll try. And that's not really what you want at the top of a playoff rotation. You want, you know, guys that, you know, when they're out there, you know you're going to win. And I just don't think Boston has that in their rotation.
So. I don't think so either, to be honest with you. I had said about a lot of smoke and mirrors last year, and the staff was good. Obviously, Buchholz is the biggest problem. I mean, here's a guy who was, 10-0 or 9-0 last year before he got hurt. This year, he hasn't even played close to that.
Oh, he's been a disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's totally physical with him. It could be a mental just logjam. I really don't know, but I watched him on that Memorial Day start against Atlanta when they broke their losing skid, but he,
right.
I mean, he just looked horrible. Just couldn't find the strike zone. Couldn't do anything.
Sticking with that division, the Orioles, who a lot of people thought last year they showed their the holes in their cheese, in their Swiss cheese, after a great 2012. Then they get Nelson Cruz, who, you know, obviously had off-season issues, but what a May he had, 13 homers, 27 ribbies. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the Orioles right now?
Good team. I think, you know, I mean, right now the Eastern standings read Toronto, Baltimore, Yankees, Red Sox, Rays, and I think if I was just looking at the talent on each roster, I think that might be the order I'd put them in, exactly there. Baltimore, they're not going to blow you away. Nelson Cruz has had an amazing month. He's been probably the best signing of the offseason. But, you know, he'll cool off a bit. But, you know, it's certainly possible that as he cools off, maybe Chris Davis heats up. You know, Davis batted 209 in May. He's hitting 250 in June. Adam Jones has been absolutely on fire. Marquez has done well. Machado's starting to hit. I know he's had the series with Oakland this weekend. There were a few incidents, which he'll probably, you know, get a slap on the wrist, maybe get suspended. I don't want to speculate, but it's certainly possible. But, yeah, I mean, this is a good core on the field. Their pitching's – it's not great pitching, but I think it's, you know, better than the Yankees or Boston and Tampa. So, you know, I feel better about my pick of them as a wild card than I do, you know, my other wild card picks, mm-hmm. certainly.
So. I'm going to give you a record, and you wrote this in your column, in your power rankings piece. 65-82, mm-hmm. which is the combined record as of last week, as of a few days ago, mm-hmm. of the Reds, Pirates, and Cubs in the NL Central. Let's go back. We're going to hop over the National League. Brewers are the class of that division. Cardinals will... They're the Cardinals.
Right.
The Cardinals are like the San Antonio Spurs of Major League Baseball. They're boring, they're uninteresting, but they're always there.
Yeah, that's a perfect analogy for them. Yeah. They win.
They
win. That's it.
It's like watching grass grow, but they win.
Yep.
Now, of those bottom three in the NL Central, the Cubs we all knew were going to be, except obviously they swept the Mets, but right now anybody could do that. They're fairly terrible.
Right.
I said to you in our preseason show, our preview show, that I was not a big fan of the Pirates. And I was right.
So far, yes.
So far, I am. Cincinnati is the shocker, though. What's wrong with the Reds? I thought they would be one of the best teams in the National League. In fact, I think I had them. We had them. I had them going pretty far. Joey Votto's out.
Mm-hmm.
They're four games. They were four games under 500, but they're lingering under 500 right now. Was it the loss of Jay Bruce? Was it Chapman not starting the year? What were the things that were causing issues in Cincinnati?
Well, I mean, I don't think losing Chapman hurt that much because a closer is only as good as, you know, how often you get the ball to him, generally speaking. I mean, as far as, you know, as far as his production, I mean, you know, if you don't have save opportunities to give to a closer, he's not going to hurt that much. And Broxton filled in pretty well. He wasn't amazing, but he was a capable fill-in. But I think here's kind of where the Reds didn't do well. I sorted for the month of May. I sorted the team stats.
Right.
Okay, the Reds in the month of May were 26th in batting average at .233. They were dead last in on-base percentage at .288. And they were 26th in slugging. So they weren't getting guys on base. They weren't driving guys in. They had no power, which is probably because they lost, you know, Votto and Jay Bruce for most of that. You know, so it's just been an offensive, you know, failure. And their pitching hasn't been really great either. I mean, they've dealt with a couple injuries, you know, Chapman being one, Latos being the other.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of Johnny Cueto, they don't have any pitchers to really write home about, you know. So I think this is just a team that, you know, if they don't have that middle of the lineup healthy, there's nobody to be afraid of. There's no reason to pitch to those guys. There's no reason to fear that lineup at all. And and the pitching can be hit. So, you know, this is probably a team that, you know, they could make a push, but they're going to have a really good June, I think, to set themselves up for a push. So I think, you know, June's going to determine for a lot of teams, but especially for the Reds, you know, if they buy or sell at the deadline.
There are a lot of teams that may be buying or selling at the deadline. One team that Lord only knows, and if they're selling, boy, do they have some chips. That's, and you mentioned them earlier, Tampa Bay. They suck.
They.
Why?
I wish I had one good answer, but they are the only team in baseball with 40 losses. They're 24-40 right now. They're the only team in baseball with a winning percentage that's under 400. They're the only team in baseball that is, well, I take that back. They're 14.5 out, but there's Arizona's 15 out. So they're just horrifyingly bad. I mean, losing Will Myers hurt, but their ERA, their current ERA is just like, it's close to 5. Oof. I mean, this is not what we thought. We thought we'd have a team that pitched well and played good defense, and, you know, I don't think anybody figured they'd hit the cover off the ball, but they would hang in there. But, yeah, their team ERA for the season is 4.16.
Oof.
Yeah. And for last month, for the month of May, it was 5, and I think this month it's, well, let me see here. This month, wow. For the month of June, it's a respectable 4.17. So, but yeah, these guys just, they're not doing anything well. You know, they're not playing with any kind of urgency. It just seems like maybe their run is over. You know, maybe they need to go back to the drawing board. And but yeah, if you're absolutely right. If they decide to start trading pieces, you know, you start with David Price, and you know, maybe the rebuild doesn't take that long. But
well, I mean, he's a guy. Obviously, the two nicest pieces on that team are him and Longoria. I don't think they trade Longoria. I mean, you got to have some kind of guy to build around. And one thing we'll say about Tampa Bay, and there have been articles in both SI and ESPN the magazine. They have one of the best scouting structures in all of Major League Baseball. So they're a team that can continue to cultivate. And, you know, you go through, they're not like the Phillies, the team that beat them in the 2008 World Series. Boy, they got nothing on the farm. Let me ask you, at the moment, as we go through June, and we're still got, obviously, you know, 20-something days left, what team do you see rising in your power rankings from the end of May, and who do you see dropping in your power rankings from May?
Well, you know, I'm just kind of scanning it now, but, I think the team that probably could make the biggest jump, is probably the Nationals. I had them 15. They're kind of in that middle gray area, 500 record. As of the power rankings, they were 27-27, and now they're 32-29. You know, they've gone 7-3 over their last 10. The pitching's been solid. Gonzalez is getting healthy to come into the rotation. Harper will probably be back. July 1st is his target, so he's not going to help him between now and the next rankings. But I think that's a team that could easily, you know, get into the top 10 of the rankings, maybe even top 5, you know, end of the month. They have all the pieces. It's just a matter of putting it together. As for a team that's going to tumble, the Blue Jays, like you said, I mean, I had them number 3. I really don't think that they, you know, are that good. And it does pain me to say this, but I think the Tigers probably will fall. I was you know, when I ranked them number five, it was based on a little bit more on their run in May that was really strong,
right?
Because they had a great first couple weeks of the month, and
yep.
And you know, I figured that's just a hiccup, but this has been a heck of a long hiccup. It's been 3 weeks. And the other team I think that could really fall off is Texas. I ranked them 13th. They were another 500 team, you know, but they lost Fielder for the year. They just lost Mitch Moreland for the year, and his best replacement just signed with the Twins, Kendrys Morales. So,
yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
It's an interesting
That came out of
move.
Nowhere, right?
Very much so. Yeah, you know, everybody was like, oh, he'll go to Texas or New York or, yeah. And, yeah, the Twins just stepped in and, you know, I mean, they had a need at first base. They really, or DH, either way. You know, I assume he'll DH and they'll keep Mauer at first. But yeah, it was very out of nowhere, very sort of, you know, like unexpected. And, you know, I think if he hits well over the next 2 months, maybe they trade him for a couple pieces. You know, I don't know if he's got any kind of no trade protection in the contract he signed. I would guess not. But yeah, that was an interesting deal. And, you know, I think it really leaves Texas in a bad way, because now, you know, they just called up a minor leaguer. I think his name's Gallo.
Uh-huh.
He's got some power, but he's coming from AA, and so who knows? I mean, that could be – I could very easily see at the end of June them being down at the bottom of the list with, you know, not bottom five, but certainly – bottom 10. They could be closer to Houston than they are to the top.
Oof.
So.
Well, Joel, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, as always.
Absolutely.
And thanks for helping out earlier in the show. Wink,
sure.
Wink. And it's been a pleasure for you to listen, Place to Be Nation. Thanks for joining me for episode number... I want to make sure I get the number right. I've been really bad like this lately. Episode number... Let me sure I get it right. I'm pretty sure it's... I brain farted. 8! I was right. Episode 8 of the Place... It's been one of those nights of the Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Let's just walk out of here. Joel, it's been a pleasure. I thank Andrew Reich. Doctor, we're going to get that connection taken care of. And you've been in the Extra Point. You've kicked it. You've won it. You've survived this show. And we appreciate it. Extra Point at PlaceToBeNation.com. Give us your comments, trivia, anything. How to get a better connection for Dr. J, we'll see. He's Joel, I'm Scott. Have a great couple weeks.
See ya. Zombies of death, quit holding out and draw another breath. London calling, and I don't want to shout. But while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. London calling, see, we ain't got no hide. Except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The ice cream is coming, the sun's zooming in. Engines stop running, the wheat is going big, a nuclear error. But I have no fear, cause London is drowning. I am by the river. It was true. London calling.
the top of the